Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update, 4th of July holiday weekend, Independence Day celebrations around the country. I'm Rick Fowler, Jeff Wolf behind the console, Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. And being the 4th of July, you may be considering a barbecue and getting outside and enjoying probably Sunday and Monday more so than today. It looks like we're going to have some rain this afternoon, but looks like sunshine tomorrow and Monday. And you're going to head over to the grocery store and you'll be picking up burgers and buns and maybe chicken breasts, things like that. Well, let me give you a little advance warning. If you went last year and you had a budget in mind for your 4th of July holiday weekend, well, we can blow that up right now. The explosives and fireworks are going off already because the American Farm Bureau tells us that your hamburger buns are up 16%, the cost of the chicken breasts for the grill up 33% over last year, and ground beef is up 36% over last year. Remember last year when Jen Psaki was bragging about the cost of a 4th of July holiday barbecue would be like 16 cents cheaper last year? Well, how about that 33% hike on chicken breasts and the ground beef up 36%? Oh, by the way, the S&P 500 had its worst first half since 1970. Don't want to forget that. So what's going on? Where do we have the blame on this? You know, where's the problem with inflation that has actually started well before the Ukraine war started? At least that was according to Jerome Powell, who is the chair of the Fed. He said that in testimony. It kind of negates a number of the Biden claims that Biden continued to claim this week. The president in Madrid blaming Russia for everything.
And so I think there's a lot of things we can do and we will do. But the bottom line is, ultimately, the reason why gas prices are up is because of Russia. Russia, Russia, Russia.
Bottom line is liar, 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 because inflation and gas prices were well on the way into the very high extremes well before the start of the Ukraine war. But why would we want to have the truth come out in a presidential statement overseas? CNN reporter asked him about the extent to how long we're going to have to deal with this.
How long is it fair to expect American drivers and drivers around the world to pay that premium for this war?
As long as it takes. So Russia cannot, in fact, defeat Ukraine and move beyond Ukraine.
Oh, by the way, if you are going out to fill up the tank before you take that trip this weekend, you'll find that the gas tax went up 7 cents a gallon yesterday in Maryland, 3 cents a gallon in Virginia. Happy holidays from your friendly state legislatures. In all of this, we've got the White House team running around, coming up with all the excuses, and they've got it down. I mean, no matter who you talk to, Gene Sperling's another one of the economic advisors at the White House, and here's how he explains it.
We want to do everything we can to both bring down prices for Americans, to make it easier on American pocketbooks, but we want to find ways to do that do not give a free pass to Putin and the unthinkable aggression and torture and murder that they have committed in Ukraine.
Okay, it's all Russia's fault, no matter where you go. There was a little revelation at the White House out on the lawn the other day from Brian Deese. He's White House economic advisor. You've seen him up there trying to spin everything and explain it away. Well, listen very carefully to this, and then we'll play it one more time. And you know, it's Saturday morning, the holiday weekend, you might miss it the first time. But listen carefully to where he explains the world order here.
What do you say to those families who say, listen, we can't afford to pay $4.85 a gallon for months, if not years? This is just not sustainable.
Well, what you heard from the president today was a clear articulation of the stakes. This is about the future of the liberal world order, and we have to stand firm.
The future of the liberal world order? Hello.
This is about the future of the liberal world order, and we have to stand firm.
Okay, so you can interpret that the way you want. There are a number of different definitions around there, but it is a little spooky when we're talking about the liberal world order as opposed to maybe the former administration, which is more inclined to put America first as opposed to the liberal world order. So the president, now he hasn't found time to get down to the border. I'm sure you saw that horrific story. Over 50 migrants dead in the rear of a tractor trailer as the air conditioning unit wasn't working. You probably heard that. Another four people, I believe, were killed in an auto accident, a police chase of illegal immigrants, and four people, I believe, killed in that accident in Texas. So president hasn't had time to make it to the border. He's a busy guy, remember? I mean, you know, you do have to leave early to get to the beach with the traffic going down to Rehoboth every weekend. Or flying out to Camp David, as he is in Camp David this weekend. So, you know, Friday's kind of shot, because how long does it take to get to Camp David in a helicopter or get down to Rehoboth? Anyway, President Biden did find time this week to play straight man for the Late Late Show host, James Corden, who videotaped a segment in the White House. It aired on Thursday. So Joe and his team had the time to write that up and spin that the way they wanted to. They can goof around with late-night comics, but don't seem to have enough time to get down to some of the more important areas of the country, like the southern border. And the numbers, every week there's like a new record number of crossings, of gotaways, of illegal immigrants, and especially the gotaways. You have to be concerned about that. Not to mention the fentanyl deaths, which are all over the country. But Secretary Mayorkas and Corinne Jean-Pierre and President Biden always reassuring us that the border is closed and the border is secure. So believe that when I see it. 6:16, it is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
An accident is being reported on the BW Parkway at 197. Looks like that is on the southbound side. Also, watch out for crash activity eastbound on the Dulles Toll Road at the ramp to go on to the inner loop of the Beltway. On 95 southbound at Courthouse Road, all lanes still blocked due to the earlier crash and vehicle fire cleanup. All southbound traffic is being detoured onto Courthouse Road at this time, and delays begin at Aquia Harbor. Tuckerman Lane remains closed east and westbound between Seven Locks Road and Old Georgetown Road with emergency road work. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert on this Saturday. Scattered showers and thunderstorms will be possible through the afternoon and evening. In addition, a flood watch has been issued for the D.C. Metro from 2 o'clock this afternoon through 10 o'clock tonight. Storms will linger overnight as we head through early tomorrow morning. Expecting partly sunny skies, some lingering showers before dawn, but I think things will clear out nicely into your Sunday. High temperatures tomorrow into the upper 80s under partly cloudy skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
77 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:17, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Well, we're trying to make sense of the administration and cut through the spin and the hype and the lies that they continue to try and perpetuate. As an example, this was a good one. President in Madrid, the press conference that that was taking place in Madrid, the G7, they were talking about NATO and other things. President is asked about the direction of the country, how people are feeling about the country, the right direction, wrong direction, and, 85% of the people think the country's going in the wrong direction. And here's how the president explains it.
I can understand why the American people are frustrated because of inflation. But inflation is higher in almost every other country. Prices in the pump are higher in almost every other country. We're better positioned to deal with this than anyone, but we have a way to go.
So the way the president sees it is the spin they've also put on it. We've heard this out of the White House press briefing room. Well, you know, we've got inflation, but it's a lot worse everywhere else. It's the old two wrongs make a right mentality. Well, don't worry about it here because it's worse there. Well, it's pretty bad here, Mr. President, and there are other countries in the world that do have lower inflation rates than ours. Got to watch it on those misrepresentations, Mr. President. Of course, when it was Trump, they were lies. But in the Biden administration, it's, you know, mistake or misspoke or misrepresentations, also known as lies. We turn to the Supreme Court. We have seen the continuing attacks on the individual justices, on the institution of the Supreme Court, the temper tantrum from the liberals, the progressives, who are not happy with decisions on the Supreme Court. Even though Brett Kavanaugh did side with the administration as they lift the Remain in Mexico policy, and Brett Kavanaugh did go with the decision to allow the administration to proceed on lifting Remain in Mexico. If Kavanaugh was such a conservative political hack as they would have you believe, I don't think he would have voted that way. But nobody seems to want to remember that the Supreme Court justices do not operate based on polls and political campaigns. They operate based on the law and the Constitution. Might want to remind some people about that, that probably missed that lesson in class because they were studying something else in the newer curriculums. So, the Supreme Court, people are upset, and the president, as I say, he's getting the kind of the list of things that are wrong in the country and the 85% of the people who feel we're going in the wrong direction. Here's how he answers that question.
The one thing that has been destabilizing is the outrageous behavior of the Supreme Court of the United States in overruling not only Roe v. Wade, but essentially challenging the right to privacy. We've been a leader in the world in terms of personal rights and privacy rights, and it is a mistake, in my view, for the Supreme Court to do what it did.
So we've got inflation going on out there. We've got the southern border crisis. We've got the economy. The stock market's gone down the toilet. All these things that are troubling the American people. But what is it that he says? The one thing that is destabilizing is the Supreme Court. Just kind of none of the other stuff matters. Don't worry about that, because the one thing that is destabilizing is the Supreme Court. So there's talk now, since they can't get their way, well, let's change the rules of the game. And that's the talk of the filibuster.
The most important thing to be clear about is we have to change. I believe we have to codify Roe v. Wade in the law. And the way to do that is to make sure the Congress votes to do that. And if the filibuster gets in the way, it's like voting rights. It should be, we provide an exception for this, require an exception to the filibuster for this action.
We can't get our way, so just this one time, one exception to the rule, let us change the rules of the game and just, you know, get rid of the filibuster. Well, guess who's back? Oh, yeah, guess who's probably going to run for president if Joe doesn't? Hillary Clinton. Here's what she had to say about the filibuster.
I've been saying for quite some time, I think the filibuster should be eliminated at the very least for constitutional questions like voting rights, like a woman's, constitutional rights to make decisions about her own body. So if you can't lift it completely, lift it for those two things that have huge consequences for our country.
Yep, she's back. Can't wait to see how things play out for her. As we continue, the uproar of the progressives and the left is troubling, to say the least. And boy, the things that they have said about an equal branch of government, just because that equal branch of government doesn't grant them their way on everything. So we've got interesting notes from Jonathan Turley. He's a legal expert. You see him a lot on the Fox News Channel, Georgetown Law Professor. And here are some of Jonathan Turley's thoughts this morning.
Well, that is what is so ironic about the reaction of many of the Democratic members. You have Majority Leader Schumer, you have Senator Warren, who were perfectly apoplexic about this decision, and weren't even saying, you know, who's going to deal with this problem? Well, you're going to deal with the problem. I mean, what they're complaining about is the court protecting their authority. What the court is saying is that this is a matter for Congress. You just can't have agencies taking major questions away from the legislative branch and rendering their own decisions.
So if you haven't paid that close attention to the news this week and heard some of the things that have been said, here's just a slight montage. I'm sure you'll recognize the voices.
Thanks to how this court was put together, its credibility has never been more in question.
This is not just a crisis of Roe. Mm-hmm. This is a crisis of our democracy. The Supreme Court has dramatically overreached its authority.
This court has lost legitimacy. They have burned whatever legitimacy they may still have had after their gun decision, after their voting decision, after their union decision. They just took the last of it and set a torch to it with the Roe versus Wade opinion.
Yeah, and you burned all your credibility when you claimed you were Native American. Of course, that was the voice of Elizabeth Warren closing that montage out. The Saturday morning update continues, and we're going to have some fun today. We will be talking, of course, with Jennifer Harper. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. She has some interesting 4th of July material for us and also some very interesting poll numbers coming up with Jennifer Harper. We'll talk with our legal expert, Jim Trusty, and it's always good to get Jim's take on what is going on the legal front. You're hearing the RICO statute a lot these days. Three cases this week that mention RICO. And you've heard RICO mentioned around Hunter Biden and the Biden family. We'll talk with Jim about some of those decisions this week involving RICO, and also we'll get Jim's take on the Supreme Court and the attacks on Justice Clarence Thomas, which I'm sure you have heard. And he's got some very interesting background on that and the relationship between Judge Sotomayor and Justice Clarence Thomas. So we'll talk about that this morning with Jim Trusty. We've got John Gizzi coming up, of course, the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. We'll talk to John about the Supreme Court. And also we'll talk to John about some of the primary activities this week. More wins for the former president in primaries. We have the former ambassador to Finland, Bob Pence, will join us also this morning and give us some of the background on this momentous move of NATO and Finland and Norway and Sweden. The talk after the, of course, attack by Russia. What does that mean going forward for those countries and their involvement in NATO? That is coming up this morning with Bob Pence, the former ambassador to Finland. Of course, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will join us. We'll get his read on the very latest progress of Ukrainian forces against Russia. And also we'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer about the border. And KT McFarland always puts it in perspective for us. We just kind of take a look at the big picture, and KT puts today's news in perspective as to how it may impact us going forward in the future. It is all coming up on our Independence Day weekend edition of the Saturday Morning Update, and we're glad that you've joined us this weekend. Thank you.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
And in the news at this hour, New York's legislature has approved a sweeping overhaul of the state's handgun licensing rules. They're seeking to preserve some limits after the Supreme Court said people have a right to carry a handgun for personal protection. Governor Hochul signing the measure into law after it passed both chambers by wide margins in New York. The law almost sure to draw more legal challenges from gun rights advocates. The Texas Supreme Court has blocked a lower court order that had given some abortion clinics confidence to resume performing abortions. The order was handed down on Friday night by the state's highest court, and that comes just days after some abortion providers had rushed to resume services based on the lower court order from a Houston judge. And the World Health Organization's European chief has warned that monkeypox cases across the region have tripled in the last 2 weeks, calling on countries in Europe to take stronger measures to ensure the previously rare disease does not become entrenched on the European continent. It is the Saturday Morning Update. Michelle Murray is the WML Traffic Center this morning.
Watch out for an accident right now on the Baltimore-Washington Parkway. This is on the southbound side just after 197, and that is currently blocking the right lane, so watch out for a brief delay there. Also, you will find accident activity on the eastbound Dulles Toll at the ramp to go onto the inner loop. Use caution there. And in Stafford on 95, heading southbound at Courthouse Road. All traffic is still being diverted onto Courthouse Road. They are still working on cleanup from the earlier vehicle fire. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WML Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert on this Saturday. Scattered showers and thunderstorms will be possible through the afternoon and evening. In addition, a flood watch has been issued for the D.C. Metro from 2 o'clock this afternoon through 10 o'clock tonight. Storms will linger overnight as we head through early tomorrow morning. Expecting partly sunny skies, some lingering showers before dawn, but I think things will clear out nicely into your Sunday. High temperatures tomorrow into the upper 80s under partly cloudy skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It is 77 degrees in the nation's capital, 632, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is a Saturday morning update. A happy 4th of July weekend for you. Hope you're going to have some good fireworks at some point. And Jennifer Harper joins us, and she writes inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. And a happy Independence Day weekend to you.
Yes, sir. Happy 4th of July, everybody.
John Voight, the actor and conservative, has already lit some fireworks, hasn't he?
Yes, he did. If you follow John Voight, he has often been a very outspoken person in terms of politics, and indeed he's a unabashed conservative. And for those who might wonder, Mr. Voight is now 83 years old, but he is still very, very on point, I guess you could say. And he issued a new video this week that brought him into the top tweets of the week and so forth. Everybody kind of gave a listen to him, and he's often put out videos over the years, and this one was put out for July 4th, and he was urging everyone, you know, to be cognizant of America. And one other thing, and I'm just, I have a transcript, and here's what he had to say. He said, "We must protect our nation and bring back safety. We're all feeling very unsafe and angry, and let's remember why. It starts with the President of the United States. He has ruined this nation's glory. He has taken down our morals, our true gifts of the land of the free. He must be impeached. I urge all to see the truth, to make a difference for our children's future and our future." Again, that's coming from a video from John Voight. And, you know, it's interesting that he would bring up how, you know, he's sort of suggesting that things are changing in the United States. Well, there is a Harvard University Harris poll. This was actually shared first with The Hill, our pals over at The Hill, and that was this week. And they found that 71% of the respondents polled do not think that Biden should run for a second term. Only 29% felt that he should run. Again, that is coming from Harvard University. So, yikes, a survey to pay attention to, perhaps.
Well, Independence Day encompasses a lot of feelings and emotions among Americans as we review history. And you've got some poll numbers that kind of relate to some of those feelings about our independence and our open doors.
Yeah, yes, indeed. And I'm sorry to bring up so many numbers this early in the morning, but here we go again. If you're wondering who's feeling patriotic these days, well, believe it or not, three-fourths of U.S. adults, this is according to an Economist YouGov poll that was conducted June 25 through 28, 74% overall say they are patriotic. And also 16% say they are not very patriotic, and only 10% say they are not at all patriotic. So that's a good thing. At least that kind of basic American instinct is still with us. But there's also another poll here. I got to mention this. This is disconcerting news, I guess you'd have to say, on the 4th of July. You know, normally this is a kind of a benign, pleasant holiday, you know, in the backyard, et cetera. And there are some really pronounced culture and political divides here. And this is coming from the Chicago Institute of Politics, the University of Chicago's Institute of Politics. And here's what they say. Again, a major source talking about some hair-raising things. They say a majority of Americans agree that the government is, quote, corrupt and rigged against everyday people like me. And that's including 73% of those who say that they are Republicans, and 68% are rural voters, kind of a bare majority, 51% of those who describe themselves as liberal also feel the same way. But that's pretty significant in itself, that they feel like a stranger in a strange land. And they also, here we go, on another number, half of Americans, 49%, agreed that they more and more feel like a stranger in their own country. 69% of Republicans and 65% of conservatives also agree with that. And again, this is coming from the University of Chicago's Institute of Politics. So there's some bad feelings out there right now.
4th of July and fireworks. I think a lot of people are going to be blowing up when they get to the checkout counter at the grocery store.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the Republicans and a lot more folks have been very busy this week tallying up just how much everything is going to be costing in the backyard and elsewhere. And the average cost of a summer cookout for, you know, your typical family. Well, you know, we've kind of got some barbecue inflation, if you like, happening right now, if you're thinking about the backyard and so forth. But our friends at the Farm Bureau has tallied up how much the typical backyard fare is going to cost you this year. And they are saying that the prices are now up 36% from last year. And, you know, just a couple of prices here. The average retail price for 2 pounds of ground beef is $11.12. And the boneless chicken breast, for those who like that, that's up by 33%, as are pork and beans. So there you go. They had a lot of volunteer shoppers go around the nation to try to find that out. And, of course, the Republican Party is in on this, and they have declared that the nation is red, white, and broke. And, yeah, I love that part. But anyway, they're saying on top of rising food prices, our friends over at Gas Buddy warned that drivers will be facing the most expensive July 4th at the pump ever. Ooh. And average U.S. gas prices are now over $5 a gallon, and that is more than doubling since President Biden took office. And this is according to the Republican National Committee. They did a huge study on it all by themselves this week. And they say that Americans will be facing rising hotel costs, et cetera, et cetera. But when you get down to how the American people are feeling about this, well, my gosh, CBS went to work on that with a new poll of their own. They say that two-thirds of Americans, 66%, are now concerned about their ability to pay for a vacation or even travel this summer. But the folks, what they are going to do, if you're curious, 65% say, we're going to go out to a restaurant or a bar. 46% are going to try to take some form of a car trip. 44% are going to the movies. And only 37% in this poll are saying they're going to take a formal vacation. Another 22% are going to go off to the amusement park. 21% are going to get on an airplane, and we know what that's looking like this weekend. Yeah. So that's kind of where we're standing with everybody on vacation this year.
You know, it's interesting, the technology has advanced so much in weather and predicting the weather. And, you know, it's kind of neat. It'll tell you that you're going to have a storm in your backyard in 13 minutes and it comes up on your computer. But they're even going to get even more sophisticated.
Yes, indeed. And we're all paying attention to the weather, certainly on this weekend on a Monday. But the National Ocean and Atmospheric Agency, that's NOAA for short, they have kind of flipped the big switch on two new weather and climate supercomputers. And they say that this is going to upgrade their ability to better forecast the weather. And if you're curious about NOAA, I did some research on them. It was founded by Richard Nixon all the way back in 1970. But here's what they say. More computer power will enable NOAA to provide the public with more detailed weather forecasts in advance. And that is according to Rick Spinrad. He is the NOAA administrator. And the computers are very intriguing. They are, and I'm not a computer expert by any stretch of the imagination, but here's what they are. Twin Hewlett-Packard Enterprise Cray supercomputers, and their names are Dogwood and Cactus. They are named after the native flowers of their geographical locations. One is in Manassas, Virginia. The other's in Phoenix. So Dogwood and Cactus are now in operation. And here's where I was interested in this particular term. Each supercomputer operates at a speed of 12.1 petaflops. Rick, I didn't know what a petaflop was. These are three times faster than Noah's former system. So of course I tried to look them up, and a petaflop. I know one like physicist who could explain it, but he wasn't available. But anyway, it's too complex. But just consider that a petaflop stands for a quadrillion floating point operations per second, and that has something to do with computers. But anyway, they're really fast. This is, again, three times as fast as the agency's former computers. And according to General Dynamics Information Technology, they help develop these computers. Dogwood and Cactus are currently rated as the 49th and 50th fastest computers in the world. Yay, Noah. And that elite list only includes about 500 computers all around the planet. So it kind of looks like our friends at NOAA are all set.
Sounds cool. Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway, Washington Times. Have a great 4th. Enjoy it.
I will. Happy 4th of July, everybody.
Thank you very much. It is 6:43. It is the Saturday morning update for Independence Day weekend. Michelle Murray is watching the traffic for us in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the Beltway in Annandale on the inner loop at the Little River Turnpike, an incident is blocking the two right lanes, so watch for delays approaching the scene. Also, there is still some cleanup activity at 95 southbound at Courthouse Road in Stafford, right lane block. All other lanes are getting by, but traffic is still slow from Aquia Harbor. Still some crash activity right now southbound on the BW Parkway after 197, and that accident is blocking the right lane, so watch out for delays approaching the accident scene. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert on this Saturday. Scattered showers and thunderstorms will be possible through the afternoon and evening. In addition, a flood watch has been issued for the D.C. Metro from 2 o'clock this afternoon through 10 o'clock tonight. Storms will linger overnight as we head through early tomorrow morning, expecting partly sunny skies. Some lingering showers before dawn, but I think things will clear out nicely into your Sunday. High temperatures tomorrow into the upper 80s under partly cloudy skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
77 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:44 on the Saturday morning update.
The latest news and information sent straight to your inbox with the WMAL newsletter.
Register today at WMAL.com/email.
It is a Saturday morning update and a happy Independence Day weekend. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trusty is with us each week, and he is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. He's the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. See him quite often on the Fox News Channel. Jim, thanks for being with us this morning.
Sure. Happy to join you.
So, what do Lori Loughlin of Full House, R. Kelly, and the Georgetown tennis coach have in common?
That's a great trivia question for somebody who used to head the RICO review unit at DOJ. The answer is RICO. The racketeering influence corrupt organization charges were actually placed in all of those cases. Now, the tennis coach actually pled to other offenses in the shadow of potential RICO prosecution, but a good number of the defendants from that case that included Lori Loughlin ended up facing serious charges of bribery, of tax charges, and, of course, the racketeering offense.
So take us through kind of the legal definition of RICO.
Sure. And I'll also give you a little bit of history that I think illustrates what's interesting about, you know, your question and this expansive use of it. But RICO was basically an effort by the Kennedy administration to go after organized crime. And they realized that you had very smart people at the heads of organized crime families, which was a revelation. A lot of people didn't really accept we had the mafia in the United States back in the 60s. But when it finally became clear that we did, they realized they needed a federal tool that was better able to reach the smart leaders, to get the people that are engaged in a variety of crimes but don't really leave their fingerprints at the crime scenes. And so they came up with this notion of racketeering influence corrupt organization statute, or RICO. And the idea was, if you have what we would call multi-object conspiracy, in other words, they do a whole bunch of different things that are unlawful, then we can graft conspiracy law into that and reach the people at the top, the guys that call the shots but don't physically go to the scene to kill a rival. And so in the 60s and 70s, RICO was primarily a tool against organized crime. And then, of course, the cases would go to trial and make their way up to appeal. And slowly but surely, the federal courts and the Supreme Court recognized that this very expansive umbrella to talk about all sorts of criminality in the organized crime context was a fair one. And it may be a tough one in terms of defendants, but appropriately tough. So we had RICO being used almost strictly for organized crime. Then when you get to the 90s and the 2000s and current day, it had begun to get expanded to go after things like organized gangs. And so, for instance, that's where I kind of cut my teeth on RICO in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Maryland, doing RICO cases against MS-13 or Mara Salvatrucha 13, a notoriously violent group that does have a leadership structure to it, both locally and internationally. And so, again, you start seeing cases that say, you know, on the appellate level, is it okay to use this tool against groups that are not as strictly organized or strictly hierarchical as the mafia? And the case law has come down with a resounding yes. What you see in current days is everybody's using it for everything. It's getting very popular. So when you had an SAT bribery scandal centered in Boston, but kind of reaching all these people all around the country, one of the tools that the U.S. Attorney's Office in Massachusetts used was RICO. When R. Kelly was being looked at for a variety of sex-based crimes, including pornographic ones and interstate travel and engaging with underage girls and prostitutes, all of that stuff made its way into a RICO case there, where R. Kelly received 30 years this week. So what's interesting to me from kind of the inside of both trying RICO cases and then supervising the national program for RICO cases is to see just how widely it's been expanded, how much more comfortable prosecutors are using it. And I guess the real short answer to what you started with, Rick, is that RICO is a tool that lets you tell the whole story. So if you're prosecuting John Gotti, you get to tell the whole story of the five mafia families in New York and all the different crimes that they committed that are called predicate crimes or predicate offenses to establish a RICO case. So that's the lesson with this, is that prosecutors are getting more comfortable using it to tell all sorts of different stories, but they view it as a very comprehensive net to tell that tale.
Jim, I want to turn to the Supreme Court. We talked last week about the attacks on the Supreme Court justices, Kavanaugh and Gorsuch and Clarence Thomas. An interesting contrast this week, as Ketanji Brown Jackson moves into the Supreme Court, the new African-American female Supreme Court justice. You contrast the treatment that she's given in the media to the treatment that Clarence Thomas is given in the media, also an iconic African-American on the Supreme Court. And Samuel L. Jackson calls him Uncle Tom. And that's just one of the derogatory terms that's been used against Clarence Thomas. And it's just such a contrast.
Yeah, and it's really a devastating one and a pathetic one. I mean, we talked last week, Rick, about how these high-level politicians up to the president attacking the Supreme Court as an institution was a terrible thing. But they spend a specific amount of extra vitriol going after Clarence Thomas. Hillary Clinton called him an angry person of grievance. And if you've ever seen Thomas, like, speaking off the cuff or in the academic setting, that is a ludicrous kind of way to look at him. The guy is very bright, very laid back, very self-effacing, and actually pretty hilarious when he gets into the conversation. So, yeah, I think it's really disturbing to see these attacks. And you know, I won't do it justice, but just for a minute, let's talk about what a story he is. I mean, this is the true American success story. This is a guy who grew up in the Gullah community near Savannah, a little town called Pinpoint, Georgia. Very poor. His mother was earning pennies a day. They didn't have indoor plumbing. He was the first person to kind of escape the setting and go to college. And that's only because their house had a fire and he had to move in with his grandparents. And as a child, he was literally celebrating regular meals and indoor plumbing. And again, the emphasis in that family was the kind of American values we all love and respect. They emphasized family and education and hard work. And he took that to heart, ended up going to college, first person in his family, and then went to Yale Law School, although comically, he doesn't have a lot of love for Yale. He's actually kind of badmouthed his experience there. But he's been on the Supreme Court bench since 1991, and he really is an institution. And he's, if you read his opinions, you may disagree with his originalist take on the Constitution, but it is very philosophically consistent. It's very thoughtful. And one of the things I saw recently that I really liked to see was Justice Sotomayor talking about Clarence Thomas as a person, talking about how he knows everybody in the courthouse and knows their stories and cares about everyone, and how much she liked and respected him. And I thought, you know, that is a polar opposite philosophically, who, you know, admits that he's a great guy and that she likes him for that. And it reminded me of the relationship between Ginsburg and Scalia. You know, Scalia and Ginsburg were polar opposites philosophically, but they were good friends. That's one of the more endearing things about the Supreme Court, is that these people who are literally geniuses, who are strong-willed and disagree with each other on things, can put it aside and be civil and even better than civil friends with each other. And meanwhile, on the outside, these politicians looking to score cheap emotional points attack the living heck out of them. You know, Thomas has been basically degraded by this kind of patronizing racism where people say he's not really black. Rex Chapman, the former basketball player, said, isn't it something we've never seen Clarence Thomas at an NBA game? As if that's like your test for being an African-American, is attending NBA games. So, you know, nice unintentional racism, Rex. Great, great job. So I think it's really, of all people to be attacked, Clarence Thomas is such an incredible, uniquely American success story. He is, by all accounts, a good guy. I know some people will never agree with that, but from everything I've seen for decades on the court, he is. He doesn't deserve any of this nonsense that's coming from the left. And I would love to see somebody on the other side of the aisle just stand up and say, enough's enough. You are the ones being racist. You are the ones degrading the institution. And lay off of this fine man.
Another revelation in terms of the relationship between Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, and Hunter's business dealing. A voicemail released this week of Joe Biden in 2018 leaving a voicemail to Hunter about some of his Chinese business partners that Joe seemed to have some knowledge of.
Yeah, not just an ordinary Chinese business partner. And again, pause for emphasis that this whole idea that Hunter Biden should have these international ties to China, Russia, Ukraine is already kind of astounding. But this particular Chinese energy tycoon had been arrested as part of a probe into his financial crimes, and he disappeared. And Joe Biden, who had publicly said he had no idea about any of Hunter's dealings, left this voicemail captured by the laptop from hell, where he says, I think you're clear, after this guy has disappeared. So, you know, again, we've talked about this. This is just another, you know, kind of nail in the coffin, I suppose. The president's family and at least his son have been implicated through this computer, through corroborating witnesses, through financial paper trails, with pretty powerful evidence of a pay-for-play scheme with China, Russia, you know, Russian oligarchs, and all sorts of folks. And, again, what I've said and what I stand by is, this is the biggest integrity test for an attorney general that we're going to see in our lifetime. I mean, to have that kind of evidence already out there in the public, God knows what else they could gather up privately. And we still sit and we still wait. I mean, the only thing quieter than the Hunter Biden investigation is Alec Baldwin's manslaughter in New Mexico. Mm. But we sit here and we wait for either a soft tax plea to come out one Friday night, or whether they're just going to try to outlast everyone and never prosecute. Jonathan Turley, a Fox contributor and a professor nearby, is constantly talking about the need for special counsel in this because of the potential conflict of, you know, reporting up to the AG and to the president. I would tend to agree in the abstract, but I didn't call for special counsel just because the case already had whiskers on it. It's been going on for so long that I didn't want to restart it with a special counsel if the Delaware U.S. attorney can be trusted with it. So, you know, again, Joe Biden had said he had zero knowledge of Hunter's business dealings. Other people are calling Joe Biden the big guy who skimmed 10% off all of the winnings. And so I think we're looking at something that really smells like that old friend of mine, Rico, if they want to investigate it that way. And, again, we're in this long-standing wait and see about Hunter Biden's potential culpability.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Jim, thank you and have a wonderful 4th of July holiday weekend.
Sure, you too. Have a great one.
It is 6:56. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL, and it is the holiday weekend, and you have a little bit of downtime and thinking of things to do. Maybe if you're sticking around the house, not going to be driving this weekend or flying. Fascinating, the air travel situation. You know, we've seen so many cancellations and delays over the past week or two, and the FAA blaming the pilots blaming the FAA. It goes back and forth. If you do find some downtime, if you're hanging around the house, we'd send you over to Jim Trustee's blog at ifralaw.com, and that's ifrahlaw.com, ifralaw.com. And the blog is called Crime in the Suites, and some interesting stories there. If you like watching the old legal shows on TV, it might be even more interesting to read the blog. He's got one just posted that's quite interesting about some Medicare and Medicaid fraud in New York City. And it's an interesting read at ifralaw.com if you have some time this weekend. We've got 7 o'clock news coming up, and then we are back with John Gizzi. We'll talk with the former U.S. ambassador to Finland, get his read on the developments with NATO and Russia, Finland, Norway, Sweden. And also, we'll be talking to Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and K.T. McFarland.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.